I'm Jim Plackey, and you're listening to the Good Beer Hunting Podcast. On this week's episode of the Fervent Few Podcast, we'll talk with a member of our community about tap rooms, social media, what they find exciting about the Fervent Few, and whatever else comes up. The Fervent Few is our subscriber community who subscribe to GBH like a magazine, making a monthly contribution via Patreon. Members join us in a forum to talk about a wide range of topics that doesn't just stop at beer. Every week, we pick one of these topics and present the community's answers to readers in the form of an article posted to Good Beer Hunting. You can find out more information by visiting patreon.com/goodbeerhunting. That's patreon.com/goodbeerhunting. Today, Chris Kuntz, a brewer at Pollyanna Brewing in the suburbs of Chicago, joins us in the studio. But before we talk to him, let's have a chat with Michael Kaiser and see what he's been up to since the last Fervent Few podcast. Hey, Michael.
Hi.
This is the first era you've jumped onto this I'm taking the lead thing, which is a terrible idea.
No, it's not.
But here we are with another Fervent Few podcast. And I just want to mention from the last episode, did you cut around the weirdness? I listened one time.
I forgot.
So it is in there.
It might be.
So when we were recording,
sometimes Jordan will cut around things on my behalf.
Okay. He might have. I listened to it one time and I didn't seem as distracted as I thought it was. I was. But for anyone who listened to episode two, there were people in the window while we were recording and they didn't leave. They were just there and they were playing
music. They were casing the joint.
You're very convinced that they were going to...
Let me tell you this. That weekend, the alarm went off.
Ooh.
And I was very concerned because I had just seen those guys casing the joint and then the alarm went off. But it turned out it was our friend Mark Spence trying to get in to record the podcast and he screwed up the alarm. You can't imagine the panic attack I had.
Yeah, is that the first time it's ever gone off?
No, second time. Okay. But the first time was somebody else that I knew was going and accidentally set it off.
Yeah.
First time I thought it was for real getting burglared. Burgled.
You were getting burgled. Someone's going to want that deer head eventually. Someone's coming for the deer head.
Yeah, that'll be a hard thing to carry away. It kind of takes two arms.
Who's going to stop a guy carrying a deer head, though?
Nobody's going to stop him from carrying anything in this neighborhood. You care? Crazy? If anything, he's going to get burgled.
It's true. It's probably true. Can we talk about the Luke Dickinson podcast at all?
Yeah, what's on your mind?
It's really good.
Oh, I'm glad to hear it.
It was really good and crazy in like a... I loved how nonchalant it was. Like, you know, the internet's on fire about Wicked Weed and who owns Wicked Weed and what's going to happen to Wicked Weed and all this other stuff. And like, he's just asking these questions that like, you know, if the internet had got a hold of him, would have been, you know, I think they would expect, I don't know what the internet would have expected, but you just asking these hard hitting questions. And he's like, yeah, that's how it went down. Yeah, that's how it happened.
Well, there's a couple things working there. I mean, one, I think unless you interview people for a living, which is what I do now for beer, but I've done it in the past for lots of industries, you know, as part of like innovation research and stuff like that, is you have to learn to manage the energy in the room. Otherwise, people are either open or closed to the questions you're going to ask. And so managing that energy is really important. And so it was important through my body language and my tone that I cued for him that he was going to have a fair and intellectual conversation, not have to handle these like kind of gotcha things. But of course you build up to some of those gotcha things. Like that's the whole point.
Right.
You put them in a zone where they feel comfortable and confident in the answers they're about to give. Because most of it comes down to their confidence in the moment. And if they're feeling emotional, they lose confidence. So that's a big part of it. So managing expectations in the room, managing that energy a little bit. But then I think the other side of that is most of these people, if they ever had a chance to talk to somebody face to face about those same questions, have no problem discussing them. It's not like they're trying to hide I think a bunch of people in California right now are accusing Meg Gill of like trying to pretend that she's not part of ABI, and it's like, are you kidding? Like, she's on a show on Vice, like sponsored by, like, the idea that they're trying to hide this ownership thing is kind of silly to me, because all these people do is go on the road and talk to people about what it's like to be acquired by AB. So sure, yeah, I mean, the average consumer might not know some of those things. It's not on the packaging and whatever. Maybe those are fair criticisms. I don't know. But nobody's like actively pretending otherwise. And so for somebody like Luke to sit there and answer those questions, I don't think it's as big a deal as people think it is.
Right.
To him.
Yeah. I think we build up in our heads, you know, people who are outside the industry build up this kind of myth in their heads and about who owned what before what. And you were just like, yeah, so about the who owned what shares of what, and you know, he couldn't answer explicitly, but he still talked about it.
Yeah.
It was not only he was like, oh, I can't.
Yeah, I mean, he couldn't expose the financial details of his partners because that's not fair, but he was able to talk about, you know, how leveraged he was in the moment and like what it meant for them to have to take a buyout. And I don't know, the answers were honest. Some people I noticed kind of expressed that they wish it would have been Walt instead of Luke, which I totally understand. We're used to hearing from Walt on those things. Personally, I was excited to get Luke because I felt like we were going to get at the same story from a totally different angle. And I had my suspicions going in that Luke was maybe the least powerful person in all of that. And sometimes that's the person you want to hear from, because you're going to get a very different kind of answer as to how these things occurred. You know, if you talk to somebody like Walt, you know, a lot of what you're going to probably get is like ambition and excitement and like, yeah, I did that, you know, a lot of confidence because he was a big instrumental part of making that happen, whereas Luke was a bit more of a support role. And maybe, you know, maybe he didn't sign up for all of that. I don't know. That was one of my takeaways, was like he kind of signed up for some of it and it kind of got going and it was out of his hands from almost day one because he had five partners and he was just happy to be there doing his thing. So there was some between the lines kind of insights on that one for me.
Yeah, I think that my favorite part was like he tried to get him on or what he thought of the Armada comment and he's just like, yeah, I don't know why he said that. Like, what? I was in my car listening to that part. I'm like, what? What? What?
Yeah.
I don't know. It was really good.
They're all just people, man.
Yeah.
They're trying to make the best of it.
It reminded me of the woman from Jewel when you interviewed the woman from Jewel. And she was just like, yeah, I sell a lot of Miller Lite. That's what we do. Like, that was the best part of that podcast was like grilling about craft beer. And she was like, yeah, we're still like a grocery store. And we still sell, like, all the Miller Lite. So I don't know what you want me to say.
Yeah.
It was pretty good.
God forbid.
You went to Michigan.
I did, yeah. We took the whole family up and hung out with Grandma and Grandpa for a few days. My wife's family's from Grand Rapids, Comstock Park, and Belmont, which are just north and west of there. And then my buddy Andrew Thibodeau, who writes all the music for the podcast.
Whose name I said correctly.
Yeah, he did. He did a good job. He flew into Grand Rapids, and we hopped in a car and drove north and went up all around northern Michigan and camped for a few days, went up to the Upper Peninsula through the Hiawatha Forest and got into some pretty gnarly backwoods kind of shit.
I don't know how you were camping.
I saw owls.
Oh, fuck that.
I saw a badger.
No.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
I don't even like going to the zoo.
Really?
No, I don't know.
I admit, I get nervous around, you know, if I think I hear a bear, like I'm not sleeping.
Yeah.
But I'm generally okay.
All right.
It was pretty fun, though. I have one embarrassing story to tell about that. It turns out, I'd stopped and recorded a podcast with Rick Musciano from Sovngarde. He used to work at Brewery Vivant, and then he started his own restaurant bar, beer garden thing, which is awesome. And as I was leaving, he gave me this bottle of Speciation, which I'd heard of, hadn't had any of their beer yet. I kind of knew it was this farmhouse kind of concept. You can tell from the branding that that's kind of where they're going to, large format bottles and stuff. He gave me one of their farmhouse ales and told me to take it with me camping, which we did and drank by the fire, and it was awesome. And then I get all the way back to Chicago, and Mitch from Speciation, who I've been Facebook friends with for, I don't know, 6 months or so, but knew nothing about, didn't know where his brewery really was. I just figured it was somewhere in Michigan. Hits me up. He's like, dude, next time you're in Grand Rapids, like, hit me up. I was like, what? You're in GR? Turns out he's in Comstock Park. I took my kids to play at a park, like a quarter mile, like four doors down from his brewery.
From the park.
I spent good. Like half a day there just being like going down the slide with my boys and had no idea that he was right there the whole time. So I'm pretty embarrassed that I didn't get there and didn't pay more attention.
That's that whole area. Because I go up there once a year around KBS week and I try to hit as much stuff as I can on the way up and on the way back.
Yeah.
And I always miss something and I always find out that it was 4 minutes from where I was just previously. Like I missed Perrin last year.
Yeah,
not Perrin's knowing it was across the street from my hotel or like whatever. It was right there, really? Oh.
Well, this is the thing, is like most of the stuff in Michigan is on your way to GR. It's not necessarily, I mean, there are some really great places like Brew Vivant and Founders, like right in GR. But I'll be honest, most of the stuff I'm excited about in Michigan is not in Grand Rapids. And it's a little bit of, you know, heresy to say that, you know, being Beer City USA or whatever, but most of the stuff is on the way to somewhere else, which is why it never occurred to me that speciation would actually just be right there in GR, or I guess, you know, a few steps from the border of the city limits. I'm just not used to I'm used to good things being in GR, but not great things, with a couple of exceptions. So it was kind of exciting for me next time I go back, because my mother-in-law lives in Comstock Park. Like, she lives in his little suburb. So that's cool.
So have you been to you were at the new Vandermill facility, right?
Yep, I was there for a little while back.
Yeah, I was there, and that was cool.
Yeah.
They let you walk out on that deck, like, overlooking
the mezzanine. Yeah, that's great.
And you can eat out there.
Yeah.
But there was nobody there when we were there, so we didn't want to, like, we didn't want to request special service. We didn't be like, can we eat over the tanks? No, just
yeah,
eat.
That's an impressive facility. That's great.
And then you've been to Oddside?
Yeah. I didn't go on this trip, but the last trip north was pretty great.
Every time I go there, I'm in a mall, and there's, like, a brewery. There's, like, a weird tap room in a mall.
Yeah, that's the thing, though.
Well, it's the whole
thing. It's like Unane, right? Like, it looks like it's in, like, a strip mall where you'd find a Chinese restaurant.
That that strip mall, I actually spent a lot of time in that strip mall when I was a kid, and I didn't remember until I went to Unane, and I looked out the window, and I was like, been here before. And I was like, I was like 8 years old. Yeah. And my dad used to drive the bus. There's a free in the suburb that Unane is in, the bus is free, and my dad drove that bus. So I've been all over the bus routes, and I like watch the bus go by, and I was like, I think my dad drove that bus. And I'd like call my mom, and I was like, didn't dad drive a bus?
You're having some memories.
That was weird. It was a very weird experience. And I like I told the bartender, and could not care less. I was like, I think my dad drove this bus. And he was
pro tip, I don't think anybody listening right now cares less.
No, this is not a good story. But my dad drove a bus. Big news.
I think the best beer that I had while I was up there was we drove all the way to the northern shore of the Upper Peninsula. I'm going to pronounce this terribly because I'm just making it up, but it was like Tequamanon Falls. Big state park up there with a lower and an upper falls with a 4 mile hike in between that was pretty rough. We did that hike and then got all the way to the top, and we were thinking about like, where should we go for a beer? Like, it's probably going to be like a good half an hour drive to get even to like a shitty bar somewhere in like Paradise being the name of the town. Not a metaphor. So, we get all the way to the top and we started asking a couple of people like, you know, is there a shuttle down to the bottom? We got to get to our car. We're not hiking 4 more miles back down, blah, blah, blah. They're like, oh, well, we're going to have a beer at the brewery over here first. And we're like, what? And it was literally a brew pub at the top of the waterfall. And they had a pale ale, and the pale ale was really good. And I was dying for one, so it was actually fantastic. That was kind of a holy shit moment for me, that like northern shore of the Upper Peninsula, top of a waterfall, there's a brew pub making a pale ale.
And you had no idea.
Had no idea it existed. Would not have known it existed had those people not told me it was going to be there. Because it was in like this little, you get to the top and you go to the right to the parking lot to get the shuttle, and we would have done that. Or you keep going and there's like a little visitor center up there that has a couple little shops in it and stuff, including this little brew pub. Nuts.
Not bad.
Yeah.
My kid's been in the hospital.
What?
Yeah, that's the best story I've got. A lot of beer. My kid's been in and out of the emergency room. That's it. I've had some Lizard King.
Is the kid okay?
He's getting there.
Oh, what happened?
Yeah, hand, foot, and mouth disease.
Oh, that's the worst.
If your kids have that.
And my kids have both had it a couple of times.
It's not fun.
Yeah. You do not want to get it.
Can I get it? They told me I can't get it.
You can absolutely get it, and it's terrible. If adults get it, it's like chicken pox. Yeah. When you're an adult, it's terrible.
Oh, jeez.
I didn't get it, but one of the babysitters we had over got it.
Oh, no.
We felt pretty bad. She hasn't been back to babysit yet.
I've been trying to think about what beers I've been drinking, but I've been drinking some pretty basic stuff. Well, although I did have Not Your Father's Mountain Ale last night.
And then you like live blogged it on our Slack. Yeah. Tell me, what was that thing like? Everybody says it tastes just like Mountain Dew, but without
alcohol. No. It tastes like Smirnoff Ice, but worse. It's Smirnoff Ice, but somehow they made it worse. But the most offensive thing about Not Your Father's Mountain Ale is that they still try to claim on the label that it's a beer. Like, it says, I can probably find I can probably find what it says exactly.
Well, even with the root beer, there were thousands of words written on whether or not it was legitimately a beer or not. And right. that kind of ended up being a little inconclusive.
Which was so weird. Like, how can you not just... I mean, listen, this stuff's brewed where they make Mite's Hard Lemonade. Like, yeah. It's not...
It is now. I guess, you know, when the root beer started, it was actually brewed in a small facility or whatever.
But, yeah.
No brewer I talked to was able to offer a way in which they could brew the high gravity stuff. On that system. It didn't really check out. Strange Brews, the podcast.
Yeah.
Andrew Gill used to run that before it ended. They did kind of like an investigative journalism piece on that. And I mean, that was probably as close as we got to an answer and still didn't quite get there.
Here's what I think about Not Your Father's Root Beer. I think when they were making it in suburban Chicago and we were getting that 10% version in the bars around Chicago, I think it was a malt beverage. But I think that he was... The guy who ran that thing was concocting his own... Because if you go back... We're getting real weird here, but... If you go back to this like thing that was published about the guy who couldn't quite figure out if it was beer or what he was making at Small Town Brewery, mm-hmm. he was making the liquor, like the flavoring, on a pot, on a stove. And I think what happened was the big difference between them making it, you know, in huge batches as a malt beverage or whatever, at these big facilities, is it's like a really artificially flavored thing. Mm-hmm. It's like they're just using like a root beer flavoring. Whereas I think...
that's what most beers that taste like that are using artificial flavorings, or they're going to flavor houses to have something developed for them.
But I think this version that we used to get with a 10% draft version, I think had like spearmint in it and like these like steeped, like these actual real herbs and spices in it. Cause I remember having the 10% version and being like, I don't know what this is, but it tastes like root beer and like scary close root beer. And then it came out in those bottles and it was just gross. It's like, it was Smirnoff Ice root beer. It was really gross. But this is what it says on the bottle of Not Your Father's Mountain Ale. Let this refreshing citrus brew take you to new heights. Elevate your taste buds with balanced and bright flavors, pause for effect, achieved through true craftsmanship.
I mean, and the thing's like neon green.
Yeah, oh, it looks like it's fluorescent green. It glows across the store. Like, you can see it when you walk in the store.
There's part of me loves this genuinely, because I feel like they know that they get trolled like crazy for the root beer thing. They've been through it. They know that the crappier... You know, hardcore craft beer fans are just like, first of all, they were either in love with it or hated it. They actually kind of, there was a bit of a schism for a while. But they've got so much flack about whether or not the root beer was real beer. I almost feel like they're trolling us with that description, having fun. Because they know that to a general mainstream consumer, that's all fine. There's nothing in there that's like exceptionally like eyebrow raising. But to anybody who follows beer, obviously, like, you're just incensed by that.
Yeah.
I think it's a perfect troll.
I was disappointed that my Not Your Father's Root Beer drinking game never took off. So the Not Your Father's Root Beer drinking game, which you can find on my website, is where you pour yourself a drink or whatever, and you go on Untappd. I don't know if this works anymore, though. This was a couple years ago. You go on Untappd, you look up Not Your Father's Root Beer, and you take one drink when any of the comment contains the word dangerous or delicious. Someone made a root beer float. Someone uses more than 3 exclamation points. Someone says it's too sweet. Someone says you can only have one. You take 2 drinks when someone is surprised it tastes like root beer. Someone complains about the aftertaste. Someone can't believe there's alcohol in it. Someone likes this, but not root beer. Take 3 drinks when someone can't believe it's beer. It's not. So someone earns the newbie badge on their check-in for it. Someone says they can taste the beer. And of course, if someone says it's their favorite beer, then just chug.
Now, to be clear, we don't actually know if it's really beer or not. You could easily make a base beer and flavor the hell out of it, and it's still allowed to be called beer. It's only a malt beverage if you use something other than malt sugars to get to the ABV. And if it's more, I think it's, if it's more than 50% non-malt based sugar, it becomes a malt beverage.
You're taking this too seriously.
It's important to get this shit right. I don't need Not Your Father's /4Loko /Pabst knocking on this door.
You don't want to go to the tap room after this?
Yes, I do.
I don't know anyone who's ever been to that tap room. to drink malt beverages or beers that have been heavily flavored.
It was my argument when Not Your Father's launched and everybody started talking about Four Loko, that it would be amazing if Four Loko had a tap room. I just think that's something that should exist. I think it would be a total party. I think it would be dangerous with 3 exclamation points. I can't believe this tastes like root beer. Whatever, man. Lean into it. And that's why I love the description on the Mountain Hill, because it sounds like to me that they're just leaning into it, and I can respect the hell out of that.
Almost like at this point at Pabst, it's satire. Like, yeah. They know it's a goof, so they might as well just
soak it up and count your money, man.
Go for it.
Just lean in. You have no other choice. Okay. Is it time to call folks yet? Or do you have other things on your list?
Yeah, I think that was it. I was gonna say the only other reason I haven't really been thinking about beer too much is because I've been thinking about drinking beer too much because I have this big bottle share coming up, which is actually going to be another episode of this podcast. I want to tease it. We're going to do this podcast from a bottle share, which is going to be a disaster.
Yeah.
I'll be lucky if you even let me post it.
Will be lucky. It'll be an amazing turn of fortune for you if I agree to publish any of that garbage.
You told me to record it.
I said record it. I did say record it.
All right. So if anybody at the $50 or higher tier on Patreon will get that episode of Drunk People.
There you go. Now you're using Patreon for what it's for.
There you go. If you want to hear me talk to drunk people, $50 or higher. This is a goof. Don't do that. Don't do it.
Don't actually expect anything.
Because everyone's going to get it. Because it's going to be good.
We'll see. I love being proven wrong.
Cross your fingers.
Where I know I won't be wrong.
What?
Man. I'm just saying. All right, let's talk to some folks.
Let's do it.
I mean, it's not pumpkin beers in... pumpkin beers in July. All right.
That right there.
Sounds good.
All right. Well, Chris, thank you for bringing the seasonal creep.
Yeah. No problem.
The first Oktoberfest beer I've had of the year, Frauhof from Pollyanna.
Frauhof
from Pollyanna.
We try not to get too technical, but.
I noticed you got a little 2016 bronze GABF sticker on here.
Yes. So
where's the independent beer sticker?
You guys are
all about stickers on your six packs. Where's the independent beer sticker?
Well, we're going to have to get a few of those printed up. We do have a couple around the brewery, but one is right side up and the other one is not.
So. Well, it was nice having you here. Thanks for stopping by.
All right. So how long have you been brewing out of Pollyanna?
Actually, the 8th of August will be my 1-year anniversary.
No kidding.
So, full time.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Man, that's awesome. So, you are full time now?
Yes.
Because I know you started in a part time role.
Actually, it was full time.
Oh, was it?
From the start, yeah. So, I actually came back from Germany the 30th of July last year and knew I had the position with Pollyanna after I came back. And started a week later, so it was quite the whirlwind. So
yeah, that's awesome.
It's fun.
Man. And what's it like working with Brian out there?
It's great. You know, Brian is a 30-year-old guy like myself.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a lot of ideas about beer in common. So Everything that we do since I've gotten there has been very collaborative, and it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, he's sort of classically minded when it comes to a lot of the recipes that he's brewing out there.
Yes, Frauhof being one of them.
Yeah.
Big lager guy, and we both enjoy our Belgian beers as well. So that's a very good kind of common ground for us.
Yeah, I couldn't. You guys just moved in a bunch of new tanks.
Yes, so actually that was the impetus for me being hired on last year was the brewery opened with 6 30-barrel fermenters, and last July they did an expansion, brought in another 5 30-barrel fermenters, a 30-barrel bright, and a bottling line. So with all that additional tank space, the bottling line, Brian couldn't do it all anymore, so they need a little bit of help.
He did it all for that long.
I think he'd rather forget that he did all of that.
That's
for that
the value
long.
Of a brewer partner right there.
But yeah, so
they'll put in the extra hours for as long as they can.
Yeah. And so since then, man, we've been making a lot of beer and having fun. So
been great to see
you.
So you joined the Fervent Few. I think you were one of the first people in there, actually.
Yeah, I actually was in when you sent the invites out after CBC from last year.
That's right, yeah.
And you started the Fervent Few, and I was kind of felt like a grifter for a little while. I was like, you know.
Yeah, because you essentially got grandfathered in.
Yes.
So if anybody who doesn't know, Fervent Few originally started with about 100 folks from a CBC event where we talked about sour beer production with a bunch of brewers. And we wanted to keep talking about it. And so we created the Slack for the Fervent Few, knowing that I had long-term plans for it, but not sure when we were going to pull the trigger on that. But we figured we'd just get people in there and get them started because there was all this momentum around talking about sour beer. And it was great for, you know, maybe about a month. Like, we had a good conversation around it. And then every once in a great while, something would pop up, you know, and the conversation would go again. But then when we launched Fervent Few more officially with Jim here at the helm, it has a whole different sort of momentum now and a whole different group of people in there.
Yeah, I think, you know, since we started bringing on not just brewers who
amateurs.
Not even that, but, you know, people who are super enthusiastic.
Enthusiasts.
You know, the people who are brewing, you know, you get really busy, and Slack channel's not exactly something that you're going to check all the time.
Right.
But, you know, with this many people in there now, everybody's doing something, coming up with, you know, an idea to talk about or sharing where they're having beers at, and looking for travel recommendations or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of fun.
I mean, you're a year now on the other side of the pro and amateur line yourself.
Yeah.
Do you get a lot of value in seeing, you know, and hearing from people on both sides of that in that Slack channel now?
Oh, for sure.
Does it still feel like you're mentally kind of on both sides a little bit?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I don't think you ever turn off being a beer fan, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I hope whether you're professional or
I've kind of gone all in on this.
Well, yeah, I mean, you kind of don't have too many choices left, right? It's gonna have to work. But man, I just, you know, I'm a fan of beer, and, you know, whether it's my own or enjoying somebody else's, it all, you know, it doesn't get old.
Yeah.
So
I think the discussion lately has been getting even more, I don't know if intense is the right word, but, like, you know, we definitely had a lot of back and forth today about a couple topics. And I guess, you know, that will happen as we increase, you know, the velocity of those conversations will increase as we keep increasing the number of people in the mm-hmm. Slack channel. But everything, we may have said this before, but everything about the Fervent Few stuff, the fact that it keeps ramping up instead of, like, ever finding a plateau, like, we're still not at the plateau yet.
Oh, in terms of numbers, yeah. The greatest thing was July was our biggest new member month since we launched. It was even bigger than our launch month.
Wow.
It's kind of nuts to me. Like, I figured for sure, like, we'd get this little burst out of the gate, and then we'd just kind of trickle along and add more people casually along the way.
Yeah.
I was not prepared for there to be, like, another ramp up, for sure. And it's definitely changing the energy in the room. Like, there's a lot more going on.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, it's not just a plateau in subscriber numbers, but the fact that the conversation continues. Like, there's never a day, like, maybe Sundays are slow, but, like, there's never a day where there isn't, like, 100 messages to check and, like, four or five conversations going on across all the other channels too. Like, not just the general channel, but the weekly topic's always lively. And now that's kind of spilling out almost into the general topic, especially as we add people who weren't able to contribute on the weekly topics in the past. Well, now they want their, you know, kind of voices heard on those things as well.
Mm-hmm.
Which will be interesting to see if we ever do go back and revisit any weekly topics, if we'll ever do, like, a 2.0 like version of the weekly topics, because I mean, if we keep adding subscribers at the rate that we're adding them, there's going to be people who want their voices heard about taprooms and bottle lists and
stuff. We can chat about it, whether I don't know.
I think we're looking at, you know,
are you overwhelmed, Jim? Is that what do you need?
No.
You want to raise? Is that what this is about?
Wow. Wow. Yes. The answer is yes.
It's going to be all right in there. It's going to be all right. Don't let them beat you down.
They're fine. No, everybody's great. Everybody's amazing. And they're treating me wonderfully.
I'm waiting for Jim to have to like actually moderate, you know, some heated debate.
Yeah.
Where, you
we're
know,
not close today, but I don't know how much I'm supposed to moderate this guy over here.
I don't think that's part of the job description.
No, because twice.
Tread lightly, pal.
Twice now, I've been like, oh boy, this is it. This is where we lose our first subscriber because Kaiser's got it in there.
Not at all. He's gonna come on this podcast in 2 weeks.
That's true.
He was the first person I invited. It'll be great.
It will be good. It'll be good. I want
people don't realize that when I'm hugging them, I'm hitting them, and when I'm hitting them, I'm hugging them. Like that's just
that should
it
be
works.
Your Twitter bio.
Keep your friends close and your enemies closer.
Something like that. Yeah, everybody's just really close, is what it comes down to.
Real tight in there.
Oh man. Yeah. What's it like to have your notifications blowing up all day? I noticed you were on snooze today.
Oh yeah. I just couldn't. I was too. We were too busy today. It was. We're getting ready for. We're pouring at the Taste Roselle this weekend with our second location opening up.
That's right.
So we're out there sponsoring that this weekend. We're looking forward to it. And this week is a lot of kegging, a lot of getting stuff ready for the event. So today, I could not keep up with what was going on the Slack channel.
Well, let's read it.
I normally catch up, get home, put the kids to bed. It's like 8:30, and then I spend like an hour reading through all the messages. And sometimes it's too much.
It's too much.
And Slack is pretty good about, you know, bringing you back to the start of the conversation. But sometimes it's like, why am I reading stuff from 4 days ago, Slack?
Yeah, there's a lot going on in there. One of the recent weekly topics that we had in there was about tap rooms. And with you guys about to open up a second location, what were some of the thoughts you had on what makes or breaks a great tap room? I mean, you guys have one of the better ones out in the burbs for sure. So I'd imagine you have some lessons learned already from there. But as you think about the second place, it's obviously going to be a totally different dynamic.
It is. I'm not one of the five co-founding partners, but certainly, you know, being that close to them, we do talk about it a lot. And you know, the thing about the tap rooms for me is it's got to be a space that you want to be in. And for me, wanting to be in a space is not only the aesthetics, the lighting, the tone of it, but man, you have to have the right people because service can make such a huge experience for people.
Yeah.
As you had when you were in Boston, like, you know, the guy came around, he poured the, you know,
Rule 34. Yeah, that was amazing.
I mean, that you will never forget that experience. And when you can give somebody that experience in a tap room, you know, it can really elevate the whole experience for beer and, you know, for the people that you're with. So,
yeah.
You know, I think our new place is going to be really cool. If anybody hasn't read, it's on PollyannaBrewing.com, Roselair. We're going to start with two 15-barrel fooders there, and we're going to be focusing a lot more on wild sour type production. So Brian and I are very excited about that. You know, those are beers that we like to drink, that we like to make, and so that's going to be sort of the overall vibe for the place, but it's not strictly going to be sours. We're going to have everything on that we have at Lamont in the Roselle tap room as well, but you know, it's going to be a good mix.
Yeah, and, but in terms of what's being produced there, it's going to be some of the slower wild sour stuff.
Yeah. I mean
that alone will change a vibe, right? Like,
certainly.
Is it the main tap room, the main brewery? Like, it's obviously a very busy environment. Like, you're making a lot of beer there.
Yes.
And kind of around the clock.
Yeah.
And so this other place having, you know, wood aged, I'd imagine it's going to be a little bit slower of a vibe, a little bit warmer, a little bit sleepier, but in a good way, right? Like in this like really kind of inviting way.
Yes, it's going to be some place that you can come, relax, group of friends. You know, it's not going to be a bustling downtown tap room. Like that's not, you know, that's not what we're looking for. Certainly, if it's busy, that's great. but we're also going to have an outside area that folks can enjoy during our warm weather months.
So, yeah, right on.
I'm really looking forward to that. I mean, at our current location, we do have a little balcony seating area, but this is going to have more of like a beer garden vibe.
Yeah.
You know, nothing like Munich, but, you know, similar idea.
Right on. In terms of weekly topics coming up, anything you'd be interested in talking about from the perspective of a pro brewer?
You know, I really, the taproom thing was really cool. I thought the social media topic that we had was awesome. It just, you know, it certainly helps being part of a brewery's social media and what we're putting out there. It was very, very informative.
Do you get to work on that stuff?
Yeah, Brian and I pretty much handle all the social media.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't realize.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew Brian did a good bit of that, but.
Yeah, well, he's kind of brought me into that as well. And that's cool. Tried to do more of the day-to-day kind of Instagram story stuff. So I'm not nearly as inventive or wild as the guys from Goose are. They do a pretty good job with their Instagram stories and stuff. But, you know, more just to show people what we're doing every day at the brewery, whether it's bottling or kegging or, you know, we've got the guys from ICANN there, you know, canning a couple batches of beer or something. So
do you look to Goose's social media for inspiration?
That's something that, man, they catch my eye all the time. They really do a good job just with the way that they're always engaging. And, you know, you feel like, man, those guys really have a lot of fun. Yeah. And I want to have that much fun, too. So
the irony. The irony is rich in the room right now. So the previous conversation we had was with a social media manager. Oh. And one of the things we talked about was posting the same content too often around, you know, a number of channels or whatever, and getting a little flat with it, you know, not really treating those like individual channels. And one in the example of a recent negative one for Jim was Goose Island. Which was a fair criticism. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to put you on the spot. I think you had a smart point about how they utilized a video. But I generally do find them to be pretty sharp and like creative with a lot of the stuff they're doing.
Yeah, they go all over the place for me. You know, they have some stuff that's really personal and engaging with people. And but then today, you know, they posted the same video three times to this, you know, all the same stuff. That's what we talked about earlier. But then they'll do things like the 312 o'clock bit, where at 312 they tweet what's his name chugging a 312.
Probably Ken.
Ken chugging a 312 at 312 o'clock, and it's always this like insanely over the top thing, and you're like, yeah, that's pretty, I chuckle at that, that's pretty good. and they actually do sometimes do a pretty good job of taking the same piece of content and molding it for the right media channel. They had a misstep today, but yeah, they are one of the better social media.
Are you gonna forgive them?
No, never. But I will still wait in line for Bourbon County Stout.
You should probably tweet at them so that they can respond with a GIF.
Oh God! You know, every time they do that, I always have to go, did they make that just for me, or they have that?
When they hear you ask that question, they're gonna high five in the office. I swear to God.
God damn it. Because sometimes it feels like it. Sometimes I'm like, oh, they have a whole bank of these. And then sometimes they go, did they just do that right now? They just do that for right now?
Genius.
They're good.
They got you.
They're good.
They've got you questioning reality.
You probably filmed those.
It's possible. It's not possible. It's not possible at all, actually.
Just kidding. JK.
Well, what are some of the stuff? What are some of the beers you've been drinking lately? Have you had a chance to drink lately?
Oh yeah, I always make time.
All right.
But let's see. Most recent things. My neighbor has a really great job that he gets an hour for lunch, so he swings by Half Acre.
Okay.
And so he has picked up every one of their wild releases so far.
Oh, okay.
And so I've had a few of those and was really impressed.
That's great to hear.
To me, very balanced, approachable start to like a wild sour introduction to their, you know, obviously they're known for all their hoppy stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
For folks who may love them for their four packs of Daisy Cutter, like, you know, wild may not be really on their radar, but I thought all three that I've had so far have been very balanced, very well done beers. So
that's exciting to hear. I admit, when I went to the Great North, is that what they called it?
The
party?
Big North.
Yeah, the Big North. Awesome party, and they had some of their earliest sours, wilds, a mix of the two. Some were I think some were kettled. I could be wrong about that, but I'm pretty sure that that was the case. It was a mix of offerings on the sour side. And I didn't really glom onto any of them. Like they were all a little too loose for me, kind of all over the place, a little rough around the edges. And knowing how great they are at hoppy beers, I was like, ah. I mean, I wasn't expecting great wild ales, but it seemed like they had a long way to go before their sour or wild side was ever going to be as good as their hoppy beers are for me, which are just like the best.
Wow. Yeah.
So it's exciting to hear that, because I haven't had any other stuff recently. Like I probably wouldn't have sought it out as a result of that experience. But so that's exciting for me to hear that that's coming around and somebody like you really likes it. I'm going to give it another shot.
Yeah.
It seems like Daisy Cutter, they sell so much Daisy Cutter that it afforded them this time to be really patient with those beers. They're priced appropriately, as in like they're expensive for like, you know, being these things that sat in wood since that new facility opened. They weren't rushed at all because they don't need to rush sour beers because it's just not ever going to be the focus.
They've always been a pretty patient brewery in general.
Yeah.
I mean, as much as they're a Daisy Cutter factory, you know, because they had to be for a while, I've always found Gabe and the overall approach to the operation to be pretty patient. Yeah, so that makes sense to me.
I mean, look how long it's taken them to get that like beer garden open.
Yeah.
I remember they bought that building over there. A friend of mine lives around the corner and he's like been waiting for 2 years for them to like open the like beer garden part. Yeah. And he's just like, just waiting. Yeah. I when I went to the Big North, I base camped from his house. Like I just parked at his house and walked over there. And I was like, you live right. It's like, right. He didn't go, but took me like 5 minutes to walk over there. And I was like, you live right by Half Acre.
Yeah.
Like it's right there.
It's going to be a pretty crazy experience. That neighborhood doesn't have anything close to that. I mean, they barely have any bars in that area. The dangerous thing for me is that it's between my house and the Hop Leaf.
Ooh.
And so it's going to test my allegiances a little bit.
I'm a little nervous. You can do both.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure Michael Roper wants to hear that either.
He'll go to Hop Leaf. Don't worry.
It'll be fine. It'll be fine. Yeah. Glad to hear that. That's exciting news.
And most recently, a couple weeks ago, I got by Dovetail for the first time.
What did you think of that?
Oh man, I want it all.
your body language is pretty expressive.
Their Summer Helles was just so good. Have you had it?
I haven't had the Summer Helles. No, I mean I've enjoyed the lager.
Yeah, the Summer Helles, man.
Yeah, that's exciting. Now that's in my neighborhood.
Yeah, and got a little tour from Bill, so that was a lot of fun.
I really like those guys a lot.
Yeah,
I think they're like nerdy in the best way. They're really welcoming in the best way. They're really into what they're doing.
For sure.
Yeah.
Fellow Siebel guys, so.
That's right, yeah.
We're able to work that angle a little bit.
Did you have like a secret handshake or something? Is that what you were just showing us?
No. Just the, you know.
That's a non-gesture. That's like, it looks like you're like putting a pizza in an oven.
A dollar.
Yeah, you're sliding like, a dollar across the bar. That's what you're doing.
Here's my Siebel book. Let me have a tour. I don't have any Siebel books.
Is that the sound of an overcarbonated beverage? Is that what you were just making there? Because that's what a Siebel sounds like. So what's up? What's new with you? What's coming up next? What are you guys working on?
Well, next we're going to be getting things ready for JBF.
Okay.
Looking forward to that. I'm our quote-unquote packaging manager.
Okay.
Not official title, but
it's what got you.
I do all the bottling at the facility, so so we'll be doing our Fruhoff and our Summerly, our raspberry wheat beer.
Yeah.
So looking forward to
those are going to JBF.
Yeah. So we're looking forward to sending those out and seeing how they do this year. So
right on.
It was very exciting last year when Fruhoff won.
I bet.
We'll see if we can do a repeat.
Nothing for certain,
but
I can give it a vote right now.
Yeah,
yeah, that's awesome.
And looking forward to doing. Brian and I have been doing more collaboration on some of our stuff coming up. So got a few things in the works, and we're looking forward to the fall. Summer's been absolutely crazy around the brewery, so looking forward to. A little bit of a, you know, not that we don't want to make and sell beer, but a little bit of a slowdown wouldn't hurt anybody.
Right. Give you time to check that Slack channel.
Yeah, for sure. I got to, you know, I didn't get into this profession to be working all the time.
Well said. Thanks for the beer, man.
Yeah, cheers.
Thanks to the members of the Fervent Few whose subscriptions directly fund GBH's content. If you'd like to support GBH, we use Patreon as a way that our readers and listeners can subscribe with a monthly contribution, just like subscribing to a magazine. If you want to join, visit patreon.com/goodbeerhunting or click on the link on our show notes. And Guinness for their underwriting contributions. If you'd like to inquire about underwriting support for GBH, get in touch via the website or email underwriting@goodbeerhunting.com. Our music is produced by Andrew Thibodeau, and our sound engineer is Jordan Stalling of Particle Audio. Aim true, poor liberal. Have a great week.